on this 19th day of November 2010 in Gainesville, Florida, we're going to be speaking on something that I've dubbed the Krishna Katamrita, Krishna Katashtaka, excuse me. What this is are 8 verses from the 12th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. You can see there, 12th canto, chapter 12, text 48 to 55. And before I begin, I should offer my obeisances to Srila Prabhupada. Om Jnana Tamadam Vasya Jnanandana Shalakaya Chakshurun Minatam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, open my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him and all members of the Sri Parampara.
Hare Krishna.
This is going to stick. I've dealt with these before. Hare Krishna. Thank you. Okay. Can you find 11:11:19? So what we have here are 8 verses spoken by Suta Goswami to the sages of Naimasharanya. I assume you're all familiar with the scene of the Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam was originally spoken by Krishna to Brahma in 4 verses, and later expanded by Vyasadeva, and later expanded by Shukadeva Goswami when he spoke to Maharaj Parikit on the bank of the Ganges. Hare Krishna. Yeah, this is a problem. Okay. Now in that audience was Suta Goswami. He heard Shukadeva Goswami speak to Maharaj Parikit, and amazingly, he remembered everything. He remembered every word. And later on, when the sages of Naimasharanya had gathered on the eve of the Kali Yuga to perform sacrifice and try to determine the best means or best dharma for the people of the coming dark age, Suta Goswami was elected, if you will, or appointed as the speaker. He was the most learned, they felt, and the most acquainted with the Vedas. And so he is actually the speaker of this Bhagavatam that we have. And he quotes many others as many quotes within quotes. So after the whole thing is spoken, the Bhagavatam is complete in 12 cantos. And then near the end, this is the 12th chapter, there's one more chapter. These are his final instructions. So just like in the Bhagavad Gita, we have practically the final instruction of Krishna. You know, man mana bhava man bhakto man jaji mam namaskaru mame vaishyasi satyam te pati jane priyosime. He says to Arjuna, this is now the most confidential secret knowledge. I'm telling you again, he already spoke this verse at the end of 9th chapter. Just think of me, become my devotee, offer your obeisance to me, and offer your homage to me, and certainly you will come to me. I promise you this. You're my very dear friend. And sarva dharmam parityajya mame kaṅkṣaraṇam vraja ham tvam sarva pāpebhyo mokṣayiṣyāmi māśyaja. Just give up all other dharmas, just do these one things that I just explained to you, and I will leave all sinful reactions. Do not fear. Arjuna was afraid of getting sinned for killing, all this killing. So this is the essence of the Gita. If you can follow those 2 verses, we understand the import of the Gita. So the final instructions are always very important to meditate on. So this is like the summary of Suta Goswami's instructions on the practice of bhakti that he's giving now, and he repeats some verses, important verses that were spoken much earlier in the first canto. So I'd like to go through these, and I made a little outline of the main points, and we can discuss, so we can see how they are so seminal, if you will, important for us to understand the Bhagavad philosophy and Bhakti Yoga in general. So we can chant these, since you can all see this board. I will try to do it like a regular verse, one line at a time. Sankirtamano Bhagavan Ananta Shurtano Bhavo Vyasanam Hipungsam Pravishya Chittam Vidunotya Shesham Yatatamoko Brahmivati Vataha When people properly glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or simply hear about His power, the Lord personally enters their hearts and cleanses away every trace of misfortune, just as the sun removes the darkness, or as a powerful wind drives away the clouds. Okay, so I can see that here. And here are the salient points from this verse, and there's no purport actually. Sutta Goswami now summarizes his instructions on the process of bhakti yoga. Now you have to understand there's a distinction between the process and the philosophy that undergirds or the foundation of the process. Who is Krishna? How he creates everything? How he's all pervading? Who we are? All of that has been dealt with in detail in the Bhagavad Purana throughout. So now he's simply speaking on the essence of the process of devotional service, the practice. So it's significant that the first word he uses is Sankirtan. This is the Sankirtan movement. It in this age, only by Sankirtan, congregational chanting of the names and glories of the Lord, is there any hope for advancement. Now, some of you may be familiar with this important verse that Lord Chaitanya spoke. Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Hare Nama Eva Kevalam. Kalau Nasteva, Nasteva, Nasteva Gatera Anyata. If you want to achieve the supreme goal of life in this age, when dissension and chaos abound, there is no other way. There is no other way. There is no other way that can ever be found. But to chant Krishna's name, but to chant Krishna's name, but to chant Krishna's name with a stout-hearted vow, and to pray, O Lord Krishna, O friend of the poor, let my head ever unto your lotus feet bow. So this is a very essential verse for us, because it explains that in this age, this particular age, the chanting is central and essential, the chanting of the holy name. So it begins with the word Sankirtan. Now the verse says that the Lord will enter the hearts of those who hear and chant His glories. Of course, He's already there, but we will feel His presence and experience the effect, a cleansing away, vidunoti, of all vyasanam, evil propensities and miseries that follow from sin. So the word vyasana, I investigated in some of these words. The Sanskrit is a very rich language, and like English, as in English, one word may have many meanings. So vyasanam means sinful propensities, and it also means the miseries and the suffering that comes from sin. So both of these are cleansed away. In other words, our sinful reactions are mitigated, just as Krishna promises at the end of Bhagavad Gita. And at the same time, our propensity for acting against the laws of God, the laws of nature, are also mitigated, just by glorifying Krishna. So this is vidunoti. This idea echoes Sutta Goswami's answer to the first question of the sages back in the first canto, what is the ultimate dharma? Now, if you study the Bhagavatam, you'll soon realize that there's different questions that the sages are asking Sutta Goswami. And the Bhagavatam unfolds as the answers to these questions. So the first question was, what is that dharma? What is that process by which people can become fully satisfied in this age of Kali? And the answer, of course, is that is real dharma, which engenders pure devotional service to God, which is ahoituki and apartyata, means not motivated by any material motivation, simply by a desire to please the Lord, and unbroken. Unbroken. In other words, constant selfless devotion to Krishna. That can really satisfy the soul. So the ultimate dharma at the end of his discourse. So he goes through about 20 verses there in the second chapter, first canto. And near the end, he has a verse practically identical to this. Srinvatam Sukata Krishna. At the end of his discourse, in text 1217, he says, Krishna in the heart personally cleanses away all inauspicious things for those who hear his glories. So the key is the hearing. Hearing in the proper mood. Which is the word used in those series of verses is shushushro. Which means, probably translated, submissive all reception. Hearing attentively and with the intention of imbibing the instruction and carrying them out. This is the essential hearing. So, Srinvatam Sukata Krishna Pun, when Krishna in the heart understands that a devotee is hearing attentively, he, from within the heart, cleanses away the inauspicious things. And a few verses later, this culminates in pure devotion and realization. So that's what's being explained here. The word ashesham, ashesham means without end, with no remnant. In the 12th canto verse, indicates that all the ills and evils are removed without leaving a trace. Thus, this verse summarizes the five verses in the first canon, beginning with 1-17. And ending with drishta evatmanishure means the vision of the Lord within one's heart. If you study those verses, you'll see that it's very scientific. Srila Prabhupada chose to take these verses and include them in his prayer, Markandeya Bhagavad Dharma, on the board the Jala Duta, when he wrote this prayer, praying to be able to be effective in his preaching and teaching in America. He understood, well, if somehow or other, Krishna, you could make my speaking effective, then it will penetrate the hearts of the benighted souls of this Kali Yuga in the Western world. And they will experience what's described in this series of verses. And it's a gradual purification. When we say nashta prayesha badreshu, this is a verse that I say at the beginning of every Bhagavatam class. Prabhupada says the translation is a regular attendance in classes on Srimad Bhagavatam and rendering devotional service to the Lord. By doing these things, one eliminates almost to nil, the inauspicious things in the heart. The point is that the process takes some time. One has to be determined because our conditioning is so deep-seated from many, many births that it's like cleaning a room that's been, left for like 6 months. You come back from a vacation and, you can't just do a superficial cleaning. You may do a big wash down and then you got to go and you rub and you find places where, dust and dirt is gotten into the corners. So the same way is with our heart. We have to clean and clean and clean through this process of hearing and chanting. And Krishna from within, he gradually purifies to the point of pristine purity. And at that point, we can see ourselves and we can also see Krishna within the heart. That's promised in this section. So all that is implied in this one first verse here. Sankirtamano. And then he uses an analogy, the use of two analogies rather, the sun dissipating the darkness and a strong wind dissipating fog, emphasizes the powerful and complete nature of the purifying power of hearing and chanting about Krishna. So this is the first verse of the instructions. And what he'll do now, as often happens, as Krishna does, is now he'll make a contrast. He'll say, on the other hand, there's the other kind of vibration, material vibration. And then he'll describe that and go back and forth. So any discussion on this first verse? Here's the translation again. When people properly glorify the Supreme Personality of God or to simply hear about His power, the Lord personally enters their hearts and cleans away every trace of misfortune, just as the sun removes the darkness or as a powerful wind drives away the clouds. And this idea, which is repeated throughout our literature, is the basis of the whole Sankirtan movement. Somehow or other, expose yourself and expose others to the transcendental sound, Shabda Brahman, primarily in the form of the name, but all these books, they're simply transcendental sound. So the key is what we hear and what we repeat, what we read and what we write. That's the key for our advancement. Okay, moving forward. Now the next verse he describes the other kind of sound. Now these are two verses, they go together. I'll say, you say, Mishagarastha yasatira satkata. Nakatyateya bhagava nadhokshaja. Tadeva satyam todohaiva mangalam. Tadeva punyam bhagavad gunodayam. Tadeva ramyam ruchidang navang navang. Tadeva shashvan manaso mahotsavam. Tadeva shokar navashoshanang nanam. Yaduttama shloka yashonu giyate. Okay, here's the translation. Words that do not describe the transcendental personality of Godhead, but instead deal with temporary matters, are simply false and useless. But those words describing the glories of the all-famous personality of Godhead, about whom the most beautiful poetry is written, are truthful and auspicious and bestow piety simply by being heard and chanted. They give rise to remembrance of the transcendental qualities of the Supreme Lord and manifest those qualities to the degree possible for individual souls in one's own personality. Such words are attractive, relishable, and ever fresh. Indeed, such words are a perpetual festival for the mind and they dry up the ocean of misery. What's not to like? So, going on to some of the essence of this this verse. So the first idea is the Kukata. Kukata is the opposite of Krishna Kata. Ku is always a bad, you know, it's bad. Words having nothing to do with Krishna or devotional service are here described as Mrsha and Asati. Mrsha and Asati. Mrsha indicates that such words deepen our entanglement in the illusory energy of the Lord. One of the words, the meanings of Mrsha is false, or that which produces the false impression in your mind. And Asati is similar but carries the implication of unchastity. You know, the ideal of chastity is Sati, right? The Shiva's wife. She was so chaste that she burned herself. You know, that's where the word Sati comes. But Asati means unchastity. We leave Krishna, our real loving friend, and become absorbed in his external energy, chiefly by hearing and repeating Kukata. So it's a transcendental sound that will bring us to Krishna, and it's a material sound that keeps us bound in this material world. So this is the first two lines. But then he describes, but one who hears and sings the glories of Krishna enjoys all the benefits listed. Then there's a whole list. This is the greatest list in the whole Bhagavatam of the benefits of Krishna Katha. So the first is, the words are true, meaning that they enlighten one about the absolute truth. This is the real, meaning of true. Not that it comports to some material fact or figure, but that it illumines one about the real absolute truth about Krishna and the soul and the relationship. They are mangalam. We know the importance of mangalarti. Some of you may have experienced mangalarti. Mangalarti makes your whole day auspicious. It's at the most auspicious time of the day, and the auspicious vibrations just uplift the spirit. So, mangal, they're all auspicious, meaning that they bring good fortune to all who come in contact with them. Now, this means also, in terms of going out, when we go out and we have a harinam, or we distribute prasadam, we're bringing people who heretofore may have never heard of Krishna or experienced anything in contact with the transcendental sound. Now, of course, prasadam is another way in which Krishna extends himself. But prasadam really is complete when there's also some transcendental sound that goes with it. Either a Hare Krishna as you give the titri or something. You know, the chanting should accompany all services, actually. The words are punyam, meaning that they purify one of all sinful reactions and sinful propensities and make one peaceful and happy. So this is the result of being a pious person. Prabhupada explained how those who are impious are basically thieves. You know, because we're taking Krishna's property and using it for ourselves when everything belongs to Krishna. And a thief can never be happy. You know, big thief, small thief. You're always thinking maybe you're going to get caught. Maybe that the next person is going to, you know, call the police. Or maybe they're catching me for the crime I performed last week. So thieves are always uneasy and they can't be peaceful. But if one becomes pious through the influence of Krishna consciousness, the holy name, then one can actually be peaceful in this world. They awaken the Lord's qualities. This word has different meanings. Bhagavad Gunodiyam. Udiya means awaken or rise. And so they give rise to the Lord's qualities. How? One, they fill our minds with ever fresh remembrance of the unlimited, all attractive qualities and pastimes of the Lord. When you hear Krishna Katha, you hear the pastimes of Krishna, you hear the name of Krishna, then your mind, at least at that time, is focused on Krishna. Isn't it? And it becomes filled with this, with remembrance of the Lord. This is all auspicious. And at the same time, because Krishna is absolute, his name is absolute, the sound is absolute, it affects us. They develop, the first 50 of the Lord's 64 qualities in us to the extent that we are able to manifest them. For instance, one of, you know, Krishna's qualities is he's very compassionate. He's very merciful to everyone. You know? So, generally speaking, the more that we're affected by the modes of nature, the more selfish you become. Someone in the mode of passion, especially in the mode of ignorance, he's only looking out for number one. You know, he sees the world in terms of how you can profit, how you can exploit others, you know. But a truly Krishna conscious person, transcendentalist, is actually thinking of the benefit of others. Krishna says that this is the way in which human beings can make their life fruitful. He says, Etavan janmasaparyam dehinami hidehishu pranar artar diya vacha shreya achananam sada. He's speaking about the trees in Vrindavan, how tolerant and merciful they are, how giving they are. They never complain, and they're always giving. They're giving fruit, they're giving flowers, they're giving shade, they're giving their wood if they even get cut down, giving the bark and the sap and the everything. Just see what we get from the trees. And they never complain a word. Is it? So this is the ideal, Tarodiva Sahishnana, is the ideal of constantly giving and being tolerant. So Krishna says that, and that's one of the Krishna's qualities also. So we can develop that quality. I don't know if you've studied the Nectar of Devotion. In the Nectar of Devotion, it's described, Krishna has 64 main qualities. He has infinite qualities, but they're divided into 64. The first 50 are qualities that we can also have to some degree, a minute degree. Physical beauty, you know. Krishna's physical beauty is stunning. You know, sarva bhuta chamatkara lila kalola, what is it? Asamanodva rupa shri vismapata charachara. His unequaled and unsurpassed beauty astounds the moving and non-moving living beings. Okay. Time out. We have to close this window. Somebody's speaking at me. All right. I think we'll be able to tolerate. Okay. So those qualities, those divine qualities, saintly qualities, can also awaken in us by hearing and chanting, just by chanting Hare Krishna. So that's what that means, Bhagavad Gunodayam. Then such words are ramyam. Ramyam means beautiful and attractive. And ruchinam, full of the taste and the mellows of devotional service. So there's a slight difference there. It is said, madaram madarevyopi mangalevyopi mangalam, that the holy name is the sweetest of the sweet thing. Now, we sometimes taste some pleasure in chanting the holy name, but we stop because our minds, you know, we're not pure yet. But we should know with great faith, as according to Rupa Goswami, that the holy name is so sweet. Syat Krishna nama charitadi sitapya vidya. Sita means very sweet. But because of the bile of ignorance, we don't taste it that way. But if we keep chanting according to the rules and regulations and purifying our existence, one day the name will taste it so sweet we'll never want to stop chanting. Tunde tanda vanida tingvatanote tundavali labde. This is Rupa Goswami's verse, one of his many verses about the holy name. He says, when I chant the name of Krishna, he says, I don't know how much nectar these two syllables Krishna have produced. When I chant them, they seem to dance within the mouth, and I want to have millions of mouths. Why only one? When they enter the ears, they expand, and I want to have millions of ears. Why only two? And when they enter the courtyard of the heart, all the senses become inert, and my mind becomes completely fixed on Krishna. So this is what the holy name actually is. We don't taste it as it is. So that's why it says ruchidam, and navang navang means ever fresh. Ever fresh, unlike material sounds or any material experience. Haven't you noticed that it gets boring after a while? You know, you have to get something new, something new. This is the nature of the mind. I was looking for something new. I did that already. The problem is that we also apply that to the chanting of Hare Krishna. I heard that already. You know, the mind is in its old habits. But actually, because it's transcendental, that name can give you ever new experience. So that's navang navang. And then they are an eternal festival for the mind. An eternal festival for the mind. If you're actually purified and you can appreciate Krishna Katha, then it goes on and on. You read the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Lord Chaitanya would get together with Subdhamadar and Ramananda Roy, his intimates, and they would go through the night. It's like an instant happened. They wouldn't even notice the passage of time. So this is the nature of Krishna Katha. Krishna's devotees are glorious. Let's see, eternal festival in the spiritual world. At every second, for eternity, Krishna's devotees are glorifying the Lord and swimming in an ocean of bliss. The six Goswamis show this quality practically. You maybe heard that song, the song of the six Goswamis by Srinivas Acharya. Very nice song. It's in the songbook. I assume you have some songbooks. And this is just one line: Gopi Bhavata Samatadita Hari Kalala Mangno Mahur. Now this is in a verse in which it's describing how three of the Goswamis, at least, gave up extreme opulence. You know, Chakvaturna Mashesha Mandalapati Shading Siddhat Tuchavat. They gave it up as very insignificant. Now money can buy so many things. It can buy a lot more today than it could buy back in those days. But all of these things that we can buy with money are very insignificant. Compare, and what did they do? They became mendicants. They're coming from the court of the king of Bengal, Nawab Hussein Shah. And Raghunath Das was also extremely wealthy, you know. And they became paragons of renunciation, of detachment. They didn't even have a home. They're walking under, living under the tree, you know, wearing rejected clothes, hardly sleeping or eating. They came from, you know, materially way up here to the lowest. But they weren't poor. They were the richest. And this line explains. They're again and again diving in the ocean of the bliss of Gopi Bhava, of the mood of the gopis in love for Krishna. At every second, they're tasting this highest ecstasy. So they're the perfect examples. What were they doing? Hearing, chanting, writing, sharing, mostly sound vibration. This is what they're doing. Such words, in the last quality, such words dry up the ocean of misery and lamentation for devotees and people in general who come in contact with them. So this is really the moving engine and the force of this Sankirtan movement. Why did Srila Prabhupada write all these books? Why did all of our acharyas write so much and speak so much? Because number one, it's the source of the greatest happiness. And number two, it's an act of mercy to draw others into this wonderful ocean of transcendental sound vibration. Remember that the name of Krishna is non-different from Krishna. The description of Krishna is non-different from the actual fact. If you can become absorbed, and I'll share with you some beautiful verses later. You know, it's called Uttama Shloka. Who knows what Uttama Shloka means? Do you know what Uttama Shloka means? Anyone? Yes? Exactly. Shloka is shloka. Uttama is the highest. So that means that the greatest, you know, poetry, that's why I put that in the translation. I'll elaborate a little bit. Uttama shloka means the most famous one and the one who is written about in the beautiful, most beautiful verses. So we're inundated with them. The whole Bhagavatam is full of that. We just have to learn how to relish it. So, any questions on these, this contrast between material sound, which remember is false, kukata, leads us into illusion and suffering, and Krishna kata, which is described, here in these two verses, which has all these benefits. Someone would have to be really dumb not to choose to try to cultivate Krishna kata and the transcendental sound vibration, which is what we're all about. Yes, Ru. No. First of all, you know, there's this injunction we have in the Shikshastika. Many of you may know this first, those who do can chant along. Trinadapi sunichena, todordivasahishnuna, amanina, manadena, kirtaniyak sadahari. Now this verse, Lord Chaitanya said, is so important, we should string it around our neck. In other words, never forget it. This should be like the central mood if we're interested in advancing in the chanting of Hare Krishna. And notice the word sada. The word sada means always. If one is more humble than a blade of grass, more tolerant than a tree, is doesn't want any honor for oneself, is always ready to glorify the truly glorious, then one can always chant Hare Krishna. So that means even when dealing with one's ordinary life, one can have the remembrance of the holy name going on within oneself. This is what has to happen. It's not that when you deal with your daily affairs of having to maintain the body or doing whatever you have to do, that you completely forget Krishna. You know? That's a very lower plot. That's like karma yoga. You know? Where we basically understand everything can be dedicated to Krishna, but we can't remember Krishna all the time. And so we try to give as much as we can to Krishna when we're at the temple or, you know, but our remembrance of Krishna is intermittent. This movement and the Bhagavad Gita and the Bhagavatam, the whole process of Krishna consciousness as it's been given to us, is meant to bring us to the point of perfection. We should try to perfect our lives in this lifetime by becoming fully Krishna conscious. Now that doesn't mean running off to the Himalayas or running off to Vrindavan right away, dropping everything. But it means working on your life in such a way that you have as much direct Krishna consciousness, that you have as concentrated chanting, without, as you can manage, that which often means carving out a period in the morning when everything is quiet. The earlier the better. You know, Brahma Muhurta starts around 4:30. That's why we have this Mangalarti. And when there's no distraction, the whole point is this: is the material life is a life of distraction. It's distracting us, you know, distracting the mind from the real goal, from what we really are all about. And chanting with deep concentration, and then taking that chanting and trying to bring it into everything else. You know, it's not, sometimes it's not so easy, but the practice is there. That's what the practice is. That's what sadhana is. So these kings, and some of these great kings like King Kulashekar, they practically withdrew from all of the worldly business that they were doing as kings. But even if they did it, like Prataparudra, Ambarish, they had to deal with those things. They were Krishna conscious even in those times. You know, so it's possible to do. Okay, we should go on. So now he goes back. He goes back and forth. Now he spoke about the glories of hearing and chanting, what the benefits are. Now, the pilgrimage of crows. Now this verse, and some of you are familiar with the first canto, is appears practically word for word in the first canto also. So I'll chant, you chant. Nayad vachas chittapadang hare yasho. Jagat pavitram pragunita karichit. Tadvangsha tirtam natuhangsa sevitam. Yatrachutas tatva hisaravo amala. Those words that do not describe the glories of the Lord, who alone can sanctify the atmosphere of the whole universe, are considered to be like unto a place of pilgrimage for crows, and are never resorted to by those situated, in transcendental knowledge. The pure and saintly devotees take interest only in topics glorifying the infallible Supreme Lord. So the word achyuta is there. Achyuta is the name for Krishna. Now Prabhupada gave a new meaning to the word infallible. Fallible, we know, means don't make a mistake. Sometimes he used it that way. But mostly it means can never fall down. The word chuta means to fall, and Krishna is always achuta, meaning he can never fall under the influence of his own material energy. He never falls into maya, but we do because of our minute nature. So Krishna is achuta, and this is one of his names and used in this verse, and also two verses hence. So some of the salient points. Now Prabhupada, as I mentioned, this is from the first canto, so he gave a nice purport. In Srila Prabhupada's purport from the identical verse in the first canto, 1:5:10, more or less he says, this is a paraphrase, crows take pleasure in impure places, eating impure things, while swans only inhabit places of, quote, natural scenic beauty, in other words, pristine lakes. Similarly, the crow-like materialists take pleasure in kukata, while the swan-like devotees, led by the paramahansas, the word hansa means swan, take pleasure in Krishna kata. So it's a question of developing our taste. Because conditioned by the modes of nature, we'll naturally like those things in those modes. Krishna explains very clearly in chapter 17 that someone who's in the mode of passion will like foods in the mode of passion, they'll like music in the mode of passion, they'll like people in the mode of passion, art, everything, that's his mode, you know. And if he comes across something very sattvic, it's like people who get into certain popular current music, which sounds like noise to me, you know, that's what they want to have. They're not going to go to listen to Beethoven and Bach, you know. That's boring. They want to have, you know, something that stimulates the lower chakras, you know, to be frank about it. So therefore, if we understand the philosophy, we'll try to elevate ourselves out of these modes into the mode of goodness and the mode of pure goodness. And, chanting Hare Krishna and, glorifying the Lord does that. That's explained in the first canon, also chapter 2. So, do we want to be crows or do we want to be swans? That's the problem. You know, there are plenty of pilgrimage places for crows. You know, you may not have to even go farther than your own internet screen. You know, there's the movies, there's libraries, there's books, there's infinite ways in which we can absorb ourselves in mundane sound vibration. But at least knowing that we should try to, change that, focus, is the first step. You know, by coming in contact with the book, Srila Prabhupada, or this movement somehow. So, we want to try to do that. Otherwise, you see, the word is, Nayadvata Chitta Padang. The word uses chitta, and it means very nicely composed. Maya Devi is very skilled at presenting the illusion in a very attractive way. You know, whether it's the great poets or it's whether it's the great movies or this is all chitra padang. Very, chitta means very attractive. But it's still a pilgrim place of crows. You know, it won't help us. And the next verse will say, even if unperfectly composed, and there's a story how Prabhupada, when he was at a Gurukul and some child gave him a picture that he drew of Krishna. And it was very crude. You know how children, when they're, you know, two or three or maybe five, you know, but Krishna was there, you know, with the flute. And Prabhupada took that picture and he pasted it on the seat in front of him on the airplane so he could see it and change opportunity. Rather than, you know, look at the in-flight magazines or watch the movie, you know, this was what he wanted to see. Because this was done with sincerity, there was bhakti there, and it was Krishna. This is an example of the next verse we'll see. So we have to make our choice, and we often have to wean ourselves away from the pilgrimage place of crows. The media dealing with mundane topics may make those topics very attractive to the senses and mind, but ultimately they take one away from Krishna and contaminate one's consciousness. This is the real battle that we have. It's to wean ourselves away from addiction to all of these varieties of mundane sound vibration. And then I'd like to read this little purport now. This is one of my favorites of all time. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, chapter 2 of the Adi Lila, right at the beginning, Krishna's Kaviraj has this beautiful prayer, and this purport is just exquisite. So I'd like to share this with you. So he begins, Krishna utkiyata dagana nata nakala patho jani brajata. My merciful Lord Chaitanya, may the nectarian Ganges waters of your transcendental activities flow over the surface of my desert-like tongue. Beautifying those waters are the lotus flowers of singing, dancing, and loud chanting of Krishna's holy name, which are the pleasure abodes of unalloyed devotees. Those devotees are like swans, ducks, and bees, and the river's flowing produces a melodious sound that gladdens their ears. So if you'll just bear with me, this is a little purport here. I think you'll find it interesting. Our tongues always engage in vibrating useless sounds that do not help us realize transcendental peace. The tongue is like a desert because a desert needs a constant supply of refreshing water to make it fertile and fruitful. Water is the substance most needed in the desert. The transient pleasure derived from mundane topics of art, culture, politics, sociology, dry philosophy, poetry, and so on is like a mere drop of water because although such topics have a qualitative feature of transcendental pleasure, they are saturated with the modes of material nature. In other words, what is this qualitative feature? It's like the reflection, the famous banyan tree. In other words, there's something here that's like Krishna, like the spiritual world, and that's why we're attracted to it. But it's just a shadow. It's just a fleeting taste. So that's what we're looking for, but we're looking in the wrong place. Therefore, neither collectively nor individually can they satisfy the vast requirements of the desert-like tongue. Despite crying in various conferences, therefore, the desert-like tongue continues to be parched. For this reason, people from all parts of the world must call for the devotees of Lord Chaitanya, who are like swans swimming around the beautiful lotus feet of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, or like bees humming around his lotus feet in transcendental pleasure searching for honey. The dryness of material happiness cannot be moistened by so-called philosophers who cry for Brahman and liberation and similar dry speculative objects. The urge of the soul proper is different. The soul can be solaced only by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya and his many bona fide devotees, who never leave the lotus feet of the Lord to become imitation Mahaprabhus, but who all cling to his lotus feet like so many bees that never leave a honey-soaked lotus flower. Lord Chaitanya's movement of Krishna consciousness is full of dancing and singing about the pastimes of Krishna. It is like, here it is compared to the pure waters of the Ganges, which are full of lotuses. The enjoyers of these lotus flowers are the pure devotees who are like bees and swans. They chant like the flowing of the Ganges, the river of the celestial kingdom. The author desires such sweetly flowing waves to cover his tongue. He humbly compares himself to materialistic persons who always engage in dry talk from which they derive no satisfaction. If they were to use their dry tongues to chant the holy name of the Lord, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. As exemplified by Lord Chaitanya, they would taste a sweet nectar and enjoy life. So this is a beautiful purport describing what we're talking about here, how to really enjoy life by chanting the pastimes and meditating on the activities of Krishna or Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which is the same thing. So let us move on unless there's some discussion. Next verse. Okay. Text 52. Some of you may recognize this verse. Tadbhag visargo janataga samplavo. Yasmin patishlo kamabadhavatyapi. Naman yanantasi yashonkitani yat. Shunvanti gayanti gunanti sarvaha. Okay, Srila, the translation. On the other hand, that literature which is full of descriptions of the transcendental glories of the name, fame, forms, pastimes, and so on of the unlimited Supreme Lord is a different creation, full of transcendental words directed toward bringing about a revolution in the impious lives of this world's misdirected civilization. Such transcendental literatures, even though imperfectly composed, are heard, sung, and accepted by purified men who are thoroughly honest. So, Srila Prabhupada took heart from this verse in his presentation of the Bhagavatam, and then I'm quoting it from the preface. Prabhupada says, I must admit my frailties in presenting Srimad Bhagavatam, but still I'm hopeful of its good reception by the thinkers and leaders of society on the strength of the following statement of the Bhagavatam, and this is the verse we just read. So there it says, Janataga Yasmin Pati Shlokam Abhadha Vityabhi. Although Abhadha means imperfectly composed, even though every verse is imperfectly composed. Now, Prabhupada was not a native English speaker, and yet he was educated in English, and he was writing in English and speaking in English in India. But still, if you read the Delhi Bhagavatams, you could actually read them either on the Veda base or there's a facsimile printed. These are the Srimad Bhagavatams that were printed in New Delhi, printed in India, that he brought with him in several trunks. You know the story of Prabhupada's, coming to America. So, the language is readable, but it's not perfect. Some of the English is a little imperfect, and he knew that. But still he came anyway. Still he presented these books because he had faith that it would have impact on the souls, as this verse is encouraging him. And see what happened from that. From his faith in the presentation, even though imperfect, everything has grown. If Prabhupada was discouraged, he would have never come. We wouldn't be sitting here. The Krishna consciousness would still be in India. So this is the power of the faith in the words of Bhagavatam. So this is encouragement for us. Even if Krishna Katha may seem dry at times, even if every sentence is imperfectly composed, we should stick with the transcendental vibrations and eventually they will taste as sweet as nectar. And now I'd like to share with you one verse from the Nectar of Instruction. Have heard of this book, The Nectar of Instruction? Yeah. Very good. So this is a small book written by Rupa Goswami, 11 verses, in which he kind of really boils down the essence of the practice of Krishna consciousness, just as these verses do. And similarly, they focus on the sound vibration, the pure sound vibration. So in this verse, text number 7, he talks about this, how sometimes the mind is not surrendering. The mind is rebelling against the chanting of the name and other things. So it says, Syat Krishna Nama Charitari Sitapya Vidya Pitto Pataptara Sarasya Narochikana. Maybe we can move forward a little bit. This is wonderful. So the meaning of that is, Krishna Nama Charitari, that Krishna's name, his qualities, his activities are sweet, very sweet to the tongue. They're naturally sweet. And we study the lives of the great devotees. Could you move over? Yeah, make a little room. Did some class get out or something? Hare Krishna. Welcome. So these names, as we recited that verse by Rupa Goswami about the holy name, how much he's tasting, and we see the example of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his followers, and Srila Prabhupada himself, you know, there's so many accounts of how they on Janmashtami, he would have his devotees read the Krishna book to him, you know, starting like 10 o'clock. Everybody else had been fasting all day. They're wondering when could they take a little prasad and when could they take rest. And Prabhupada said, read me the Krishna book. And they started reading and Prabhupada was just relishing like anything. And gradually the devotees, you know, got hungrier and hungrier and finally said, okay, you can, let's stop and have a feast. You know, but the point is he could have gone all night. You know, the great devotees, they can hear the sound vibration and they transcend, you know, the limits of ordinary matter. So this is the nature. So why don't we taste it? Because our tongues are covered by the bile of ignorance. In other words, we're not receptive to it. And we have analogies from our ordinary life. I like to give the analogy when I was in college many, many years ago. I took a course on fine art. I grew up in New York City. I was going to the museums. I would go and see all of these great artworks. But I really didn't know what I was looking at. You know, some 12-year-old kid looking up at Rembrandt. Well, what do I know, you know? I like it. I don't like it. You know, big deal. But if you study, you know, all of the things about art, how it's the composition, the meaning of some of the things, then you appreciate that much more, isn't it? So you get trained, and then suddenly you can have a better experience. Same thing is there for music. Real music, you know, classical music, Indian music. There's so many levels that you can appreciate depending on your training and your culture. So the same thing is there for Krishna consciousness. When we purify our hearts and purify our minds, then everything about Krishna is tastier, is more pleasurable. And, you know, these deities, many of you have visited the temple just in Alachua. You've probably seen the deities more than I have. These Krishna Balaram deities that have joined Radhashyam Sundar on the altar. They're just fabulous. It is glorious. They attract the mind, you know. But everyone sees with their own vision, according to their purity. But Krishna is so merciful. He makes himself, he extends himself and makes himself available in so many ways. This whole temple is built, right, on the distribution of the prasadam. That's the central fact and act that goes on in this temple. But so much has come out of it. Right? Devotees have been trained, they're getting initiated, you know, but it started, you know, basically to distribute prasadam. In this way, contact, people can appreciate it, and Krishna's extending himself through that prasadam. So, this verse, Chad Bhagva Sargo Janadaga Viplavo, it's meant to bring about a revolution in the misdirected civilization. The civilization is misdirected because of the Kukata, because of the mountains of ignorant vibration in the modes of nature having nothing to do with transcendence that people are saturated with. So this is the antidote. And this verse is important. Was important for our movement. It inspired Prabhupada to write his books and to come to America despite any imperfections. So we can appreciate. Any comments or questions on this verse? Otherwise we can go to one more that's described, that's also quoted from the first canto. Naishkramyam apyachyuta bhava varjitam nashobate jnanam alang niranjanam kutak punak shashvada badhramishvare nayarpitam karma yadapyanuttamam. Knowledge of self-realization, even though free from all material affinity, does not look well if devoid of a conception of the infallible God. What then is the use of even the most properly performed fruitive activities, which are naturally painful from the very beginning and transient by nature, if they are not utilized for the devotional service of the Lord? So this is the third of the verses quoted from the fifth chapter, first canto, and we'll just explain a little bit about it. So he's being thorough here. He's covering all bases. And so he's saying, aside from the gross crow-like material as spoken of in 12.12.51, there are transcendentalists who are more refined, but who are averse to bhakti and try to achieve impersonal realization of the absolute. So this is the Brahmavadis, the Mayavadis, you've heard about the impersonalists, who are not bhaktas. They don't accept that the absolute truth is a person, the absolute supreme person. Rather, the absolute is the undifferentiated, all-pervading Brahman. This is their idea. So, This verse condemns their efforts, which may in rare cases reach the state of naishkarmya, activity devoid of fruit of desire, as not very beautiful because they have no relationship with Achyuta or Krishna. What to speak then of fruit of acts not offered to the Lord? So this is basically there's four kinds of people in the world. There's what you call the karmis, jnanis, yogis, and the bhaktas. Karmis are those who are simply fruit of workers. They have no inkling of what we're talking about here. It just is not on you know, part of their consciousness. It is simply trying to survive in this world, working maybe for family a little bit or for oneself, and this is the karmi, what we call karmi or fruit of activity, and it leads to bondage and suffering. This is how we got to this material body in the first place, by fruit of acts, by activities which have bound us to this world. As soon as you commit or perform an act that is purely selfish, you're creating a further desire in your heart to enjoy again that fruit. If you enjoy something in this world simply without any relation to Krishna, then that plants a desire to do it again. You know, we know how entangling these things can be. Just think of, I grew up in an age, believe it or not, in the 50s and the 60s, when smoking was thought of, this is just natural. You know, all the movies, everybody smoked, and as soon as you got to be a certain age, you started smoking, you know. Then after a while, I said, well, this is pretty bad. You know, people are getting sick and dying, you know. Then they had this whole battle to try to fight with the tobacco company, which is paying off the doctors, to say, oh, no, there's no real proof that it causes cancer. You know, they make more billions of dollars. But as soon as you get involved with that nicotine, it's very difficult to give it up, even if you know. You know, you may know that it's bad for me. How many people have given up so many times, right, smoking cigarettes? So, and the fact of the matter is that everything in this world is an addiction. Everything that we have that's simply for our own enjoyment, it becomes addictive. And then what happens is your consciousness gets filled with that, and at the time of death, those desires are still there to enjoy again. Back you go to another physical body in order to try to enjoy again. This is reincarnation. Basic Krishna consciousness. So that's the value of naishkarmya. This word naishkarmya means activities that are not fruitive. So a few impersonalists, through severe austerities, can come to that point where they're not doing anything fruitive. But they're also not acting for Krishna. So what are they doing? You know, they're just sitting, meditating, you know, or speculating, you know, on the Vedanta Sutra or something, you know. It's a very dry and boring life, and that's why it's very hard to do. But in the second chapter, 10th canto, the devas say, well, there's some few, yenye anabindaksha vimuktamaninas, who are thinking that they're liberated because through severe austerities, they've come to the platform of Brahmand, or naishkarmya, acting, you know, non-fruitively. But they fall down again. It's like going up to the, you know, if you're in a spaceship, you know, one of these shuttles. You know, I think, did they stop them? I think they stopped them there. But for years and years, you're going up there. Okay, spend billions of dollars, and go up there, you know, and there's like five or six guys. But they always come down. There's no place to land up there, right? And eventually they get homesick. You know, they're looking, when am I going to get out of this thing, you know? So that's what it's like to go up to the Brahman. There's no place to land. There's no activity. Try to think what it's like. You know, as bhaktas, we don't... Does anyone here really want to merge in the Brahman? Raise your hand. Okay, good. Nobody. You know, as soon as you become a little exposed to Krishna, so what's the use? What's the enjoyment? Try just imagining stopping all thought. You know, no thoughts allowed. No, all you know is I am that I am. I exist. That's Brahman realization. Can you do that for more than like 30 seconds, 10 seconds? You know? It's impossible. But they think, if you think that that's the final goal, then you'll make an effort to do it. So that doesn't look very good. What to speak of fruit of activities. So then just want to point out, it also deals with the books, because there's a lot of Vedic literature that seems to point toward Mayavad. And that's condemned in this verse. In the purport to the identical verse in the first canto, Prabhupada points out that not only does the Bhagavatam condemn grossly mundane literatures as a place where crow-like persons congregate, but in this verse, it also condemns even Vedic literatures which present an impersonal idea of the absolute truth. In other words, only real Krishna Katha can save us. Okay. So, okay. Hare Krishna. So moving on. Now we're on number 6 of 8. So please bear with me. Next verse. Yashak Shriyam Eva Parishamak Paro. Varna Shamachara Tapakshutarishu. Avismati Sridharapada Padmayor. Gunanuvada Shavanada Radibihi. The great endeavor one undergoes in executing the ordinary social and religious duties of Varnashram in a system, in performing austerities, and in hearing from the Vedas, culminates only in the achievement of mundane fame and opulence. Now here the Vedas means the Karma Kanda section of the Vedas, or maybe Brahma Kanda. But by respecting and attentively hearing the recitation of the transcendental qualities of the Supreme Lord, the husband of the Goddess of Fortune, one can remember his lotus feet. Now remember the whole theme of this, starting out with that first word, Sankirtan. He's glorifying the simple process of hearing and chanting about Krishna as the greatest of all. This is the basis of our whole practice. And so here in these last two verses, this is actually the 7th verse, he's describing what the benefit is of hearing and chanting as opposed to any of the other ordinary means of elevation, such as Varnashram, the austerities, or listening to various parts of the Vedas that don't deal with bhakti. So, Varnashram Dharma is meant for pleasing Krishna. Otherwise, it degenerates into materialistic caste consciousness. And as they see Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.13, that's in that same section. And he says, Atak Pumbir Dvija Shrestha Varnashrama Vibhaga Shaha Svanasutasya Dharmasa Sangsidhir Hari Toshanam. That all of the divisions of Varna and Ashram, the Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras, the Brahmacharis, Grahasthas, Vanaprasthas, and Sannyasis, all of that is meant for satisfying Krishna. When it's separated from that, then it degenerates into caste consciousness, which we see in India in many places. Those who are born in Brahmin families but are not really qualified by Brahmin rabbinical qualities, they lord it over the lower classes, and they demand respect when they don't command respect, and the whole thing degenerates. So Varnashram is a way of organizing society, but its central core is the practice of Krishna consciousness. And so Srila Prabhupada, he wanted both things. Primarily, he wanted to create a class of real Brahmins who are qualified by brahminical qualities. They're devotees, and they're also sincere devotees who are clean, self-controlled, knowledgeable in the Vedas, understand Krishna. So that they could be a core around which Varnashram could actually grow. Those and the sannyasis are seen to be the spiritual masters of the society. But simply Varnashram without that, at the best you can do is get some opulence, some fame. You know, he's describing that, and is at great effort. Austerities. So another way of elevation is austerity. And here he says, must be transcendental. That is, they must be aimed at purification of one's existence under the guidance of a spiritual master. Otherwise, they will simply make the heart harder and lead to further material entanglement. See Lord Rishabhdev. So austerity is a central theme in any society. Think about it. People are performing austerities every day just to work a job. You know, now people have to work two jobs. You know, they get up for Mangal Arati, but they don't go to Mangal Arati. They have to get on the road to go to their... I live in California where you have these long commutes, you know. They have for like an hour and a half to go to their job. And what to speak of if you want to be an athlete or a musician or a student, then you perform austerities, taking those tests, studying, you know, working in order to get the pay, you know, to pay for the... This is austerity. But if it's simply focused on something material, then it doesn't get you anywhere. It keeps you bound here. Some of the great demons performed great austerities. Ravana, Hiranyakashipu. This is how they became powerful, through austerity. Austerity is a kind of force. You know, you direct your energy and you become more powerful. But it's just like anything. It can be used for good or it can be used for evil. So Lord Rishabhdev is our incarnation of Krishna, and he speaks of divine austerity in the first verse of his instructions to his sons. And he says, Nayam deho deha bhajang niloke krishtan kaman arate vidbhujange. Tapo divyam putrakayena sattvam shuddhye jasman brahma saukyam tunandam. He says, my dear sons, and he's also speaking to other sages, don't waste your life in the pursuit of sense gratification, which is on the level of the hogs eating the filth in the gutter. You know, don't act like that. Very strong words, but these wake you up, you know. So that's good. So what to do then? Tapo divyam. Perform transcendental austerity for the purpose of purifying one's existence. Sattvam shudyed. And from that purification, yasman brahma saukyam tanantam. You will be able to enjoy unending happiness. We're enjoying beings. We want to enjoy. There's nothing wrong in that. But it's tragic that we're looking for permanent, unending enjoyment in this limited material atmosphere. It's impossible. So he's saying, under the guidance of a great soul, here he's giving instructions as a guru himself to his sons, perform this divine austerity, tapo divyam, and purify your existence. And we'll see in the next verse that goal of purifying one's existence is part of the benefit of hearing and chanting. That's one of the things that happens. So this is our where tapas is then, and the study of the Vedas, devoid of bhakti, is fruitless. And that brings us to our verse here. Shabda brahmani nishnato ninishnayat pare yadi shramastasya shramapalo yadenum iva rakshita. Which means that one may, shabda brahman, that's a transcendental sound, one may be dedicated to it, but if that dedication doesn't lead one to Krishna consciousness, then it's simply hard labor for nothing. Just like taking care, very good of a care of a cow that doesn't give any milk. You know, it's a lot of fruitless labor. So even the study of the Vedas is not inherently beneficial. It has to be done under the guidance, and the right portions of the Vedas have to be studied. The essence is Bhagavatam, the essence of everything. Bhagavad Gita, Krishna's own words. You see? Otherwise, you get lost. You know, Krishna says at the beginning, in the second chapter, he says, Trigunya Vishaya Veda. For the most part, even the Vedas deal with these subject matters in the three modes of nature. Trying to elevate people to the mode of goodness, go to the heavenly planets, rather than just, you know, leave animalistic lives, come under the control of the Vedic literature. But it's not in and itself going to take you back to Godhead. We need it to be presented as it is by Srila Prabhupada and his sincere followers that can really give us the essence of the teachings for our eternal benefit. Now, finally, but proper engagement in hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord produces the most valuable thing, constant remembrance of his lotus feet, the benefit of which is described in the final verse of the Krishna Katashtaka. So that's the second half of this verse, which says, Avismati Sridhara Pada Padmayo. Avismati means no forgetfulness. You can't get around the fact that we're supposed to be yogis. In the sixth chapter of the Gita, how many have read the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita? Some? Many? Okay, a few. So it's all about yoga, the traditional, you know, Ashtanga yoga, meditative yoga. And in that chapter, Krishna says, be a yogi, Arjuna. You know, it's better than being a jnani, better than being a karmi, better than being a tyagi. You have to be a yogi. And it's very clear, you know, to withdraw the mind from the distractions and fix it on the Lord, just like an unbroken flame. The classic description of one-pointed attention. So how does that apply to us as bhaktas? Well, we're also trying to come to that point, you know, in a practical way. Nobody here is going to go off to the Himalayas, I assume, and go to a cave to try to practice, you know. But we still have to come to that point of unbroken remembrance of Krishna. That's the whole idea here. By constant hearing and chanting in the proper mood and in the proper environment, we come to the point of Avismati Sridhara. Sridhara is a name for Krishna. It means the husband of the goddess of fortune. You'll remember his lotus feet. You remember Krishna constantly. And what are the benefits? That's the last verse. Unless there's any questions on this verse. And here we go. Avismati Krishna Badaravindayo Chinotya Badrani Chashantanoti Satvasya Shuddhim Padamatma Bhaktim Jnanam Cha Vijnana Vairagya Yuktam. Remembrance of Lord Krishna's lotus feet destroys everything inauspicious and awards the greatest good fortune. It purifies the heart and bestows devotion for the Supreme Soul, along with knowledge enriched with realization and renunciation. So this is really the goal. Now, just as a few little points I think I gleaned from that. Hearing and chanting about Krishna results in remembering Krishna always. This is the real goal of yoga. You know, it's reiterated several many times in the Bhagavad Gita. He says in the ninth chapter that if one has unbroken remembrance of me, then I'll give you everything you need. I'll provide all your necessities. Don't worship the demigods. That'll just divert you. You go up and come down and you'll be back where you started from. Just worship me. Ananya chetak satatam hyomam smriti nityasata saham sudabhukpata nityayaktaksi yoga. In the eighth chapter, which also deals with yoga. Ananya chetak. It means without deviation. Satatam, always. Yomam smriti nityasata. Remembrance of me. The word is here in this verse. Avismriti. Remembrance of me. For such a person, I'm very easy to attain. Now, of course, if you come to that, getting to that point of unbroken remembrance is not so easy. But if you get there, you're there. Then you can, then you're back home, back to guided. So the whole, idea is that this hearing and chanting, this is our means of meditation. It's easy. It's practical. You know, we can become attracted. I'll give you a few shlokas, in a minute, English ones, that, can attract your mind. You say, oh, yeah. You know, it's a way of easily remembering Krishna. Such remembrance destroys everything inauspicious. All the results of our millions of births in the material world and awards the greatest good fortune explained in the last two lines. The next two lines explain that. So it all depends on our state of consciousness. We're bound to this world by our mind. If we can fill our mind with thoughts of Krishna and use our senses in service to Krishna and use our intelligence in figuring out ways that we can become Krishna conscious and spread Krishna consciousness, we can actually have some hope of perfecting our lives in this lifetime. And that is becoming free from the bondage of matter and immersing ourselves in this ocean of ananda that we know is out there. Here's what happens. First, one's existence becomes purified. That is, one is no longer affected by the lower modes of nature and their concomitants, lust, anger, greed, etc. And this harkens back again to the first canto, where the same thing is explained. And as one's existence becomes purified, one realizes more and more the truths of bhakti. This is the knowledge part. Who is Krishna? Who Krishna is, what we are, what this world is, and what our relationship with Krishna and this world is. This is the knowledge spoken of here. But it doesn't end there. But there is also vijnan, or realized knowledge, of the varieties of transcendental pleasure to be experienced in service to Krishna. Now, vijnan, you may have heard about this or read about this, means that one gradually becomes aware of one's original nature, one's original form in the spiritual world. This body that we have now, each of us is sitting in a body, but it's not us. It's changing. It's already changed. Right? From small to, you know, this age that we're at now. And it's going to keep on changing. And eventually, poof, it disappears entirely. But you, the soul, continue. And that soul has a form. It has a personality. We have an original relationship with Krishna that now is buried. We can't access it. We don't know what it is. But it's there. It's our essential essence. If you forgive the redundancy. And so that's what vijnan means. Gradually, that we become aware of that through the process of constant hearing and chanting. And then the other benefits, and all of this is experienced in the state of complete detachment from everything material. This is vairagya spoken of here. This is the wonderful result of sankirtan. We began with the word sankirtan at the beginning of the verse. And so when we truly take this process of Harinam Sankirtan in all its forms and concomitants, seriously, we can come to this point. And this is the final instruction of the Bhagavatam, really, Sutta Goswami. So any discussion or questions on these things? Yes, Prabhu. No, you can chant very softly so you can hear. The main thing is japa means like the remembrance, you know. So you can chant softer. Prabhupada said you can chant, you know, loud enough so you can hear. But at a certain point, I just read this, you know, loudly or softly, you know, loudly or softly. That's kind of an advanced platform that one can come to. If you're in the, you know, society with devotees, I would chant loud enough so you can hear, but, you know, after 16 rounds, anything you want, you know. The 16 rounds really are kind of just the beginning. You know, the Prabhupada always says minimum 16 rounds. But in our, we found, you know, by experience, and probably, you know, that generally from this environment that we are, we need to have loud chanting, especially in kirtan, obviously, and that the japa needs to be loud enough so that we can hear. When you try to go within too quickly, the tendency is to become sleepy or, you know, distracted like that. So japa can also be done, you know, practically silently. There's three kinds of japa. There's a loud japa, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. There's just the labial japa, where you're practically, Hare Krishna, 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 fail, you know, practically nothing. And then there's just in the mind. Now that last kind is very advanced. It's possible to do that. And that's the kind that can go on all the time. No matter where you are, whoever you're with, if that's going on inside, then you're doing well, you know. So we know from the Chaitanya Bhagavat that Haridas Thakur, who was after all our Namacharya, he did all three of those. He did, I understand, you know how many rounds he chanted? Who knows how many rounds he chanted? 192 rounds a day. That's roughly 300,000 names. And so he chanted the first 64 loudly, the next 64 labially, if you will, and the next 64 in his mind. That's one of the understandings. So, you know, it's, if you can do it, you know, go ahead, you know, chant. But it's difficult. It's difficult to come just to that point of chanting in your mind. But the advantage is, one of the advantages is that you can do it all the time. And you can do it everywhere. Anyone else have a discussion or a question about some of these points? Yes, ma'am. Direct? Yeah, in other words, the word sankirtan. Now, sankirtan literally means, you know, total kirtan. It's like san, the prefix san means total, like sannyas. Total renunciation. Sankirtan, there's other words like that I can't think of right off. But sankirtan means this kirtan, where you may have a few you know, people chanting together, or even one, you can chant on your own, you know. But sankirtan means everyone together, chanting, generally dancing, loud, like that. So, but it's also come to mean, in the context of ISKCON, devotees who go out and do college programs. You know, of course, the whole thing is a college program. But I mean, where we are, you know, you go out and do it. That's also sankirtan. Or book distribution. That's sankirtan. Because in general, it is also the glorification of the Lord. So, but it's a fact that it all rests on the actual coming together and chanting Hare Krishna. In fact, it's very difficult to be serious about japa if you're not also serious about congregational chanting, literally. They work together. And we shouldn't think that I'll just do, I love congregational chanting, but job is boring. They're both important. They're both essential. And that's tomorrow. There's a japa retreat, a little seminar going on this weekend. I don't know if you know that, in Alatra, Mahatma Babu. And they asked me to speak a little about on the central place of japa in our, in bhakti. So, you know, but at the same time, next weekend, I don't know if you know, if some of you can make it, Friday, Saturday, there's going to be 2 12-hour kirtans in the Lachua Temple. And I didn't know about them before I came. I just been fortunate. So this is how you get immersed in the kirtan. We shouldn't neglect the japa. And one of the things I've been researching is the importance that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu put on it and his followers. I mean, if we're anything, if we're at all even interested or serious about becoming lovers of Krishna, then we got to follow in the footsteps of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This whole movement is emanating from his words. Gauravani Pracharini. Prabhupada is speaking his words. So he was very adamant that his followers, now he gave, you know, the instruction 64 rounds minimum. That was what it was in his day, and that's what it was in the Gaudiya Math. That's what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the rules were. And Prabhupada started with that. You know the history? In 26 Second Avenue, he had the devotees at 64 rounds. So there they were, you know, just coming off their last acid trip, you know, trying to chant 64 rounds. So it took them all day, and they still weren't finished, you know. And they said, Prabhupada, we won't be able to do anything else. I said, oh, okay, 32. Couldn't do it. Okay, 16, absolute minimum, you know, minimum 16. Because the fact is, when you get going with japa and you're able to concentrate, you're able to go faster. When you first start, it's slow, and it could take you 10 minutes or more around. You know, multiply that times 64, that is even more than 24 hours a day. It's like 18 hours, and you know, what are you going to do? So, we have to live in this world. But Prabhupada wanted to chant 16 minimum, and then work all day for Krishna. The point is that you're still, you know, they were still absorbed. So, actual sankirtan is not, just like we had our kirtan here, you know, it's complete. Why is it complete? Because every one of your senses is involved. You know, if you really get into it, you're dancing, your feet are working, your hands are working, your eyes are working, you're seeing the deity, you're certainly hearing, you're chanting, you know. This is why Lord Chaitanya, this is the Yuga Dharma. Nobody, you know, you can sit and try to work on the mind, but the mind is too strong. But if you're chanting and dancing, everyone can get into it. It's attractive. And it's very purifying. But at the same time, we need to cultivate our own personal relationship with the holy name, by japa. Don't neglect that. Try to take it up. If you haven't already, one or two rounds every morning, you'll see it'll be a big, big difference. Any other questions, comments? Okay, so before we end, is there some prasadam you have or something? Okay, so before we do that, I'll share with you a few of the Uddama shlokas that is spoken of here. Factually, starting with the Goswamis, you know, it says, Papo tapa nakrinta nota nubatam govinda ganamatai. I don't know if anyone knows what that means, but what it means is, Papo tapa means extreme suffering due to very serious sin. That's what everything is going on in this world. But they cut it off. They relieved everyone of that, those who came in contact with him. How? Govinda ganamatai, by pouring down nectarian songs about Govinda. In other words, the Goswamis, Rupa Goswami and the others, they gave us so many beautiful vibrations that we can repeat and become enthralled and become absorbed in Krishna Katha. So I'll share a few of them with you. I've been, you know, by Krishna's grace and Prabhupada's mercy, I've been doing this for practically from the beginning. Somehow the Sanskrit attracted me from the beginning. And in the last 10 years or so, I've done a little English poetry. So here's one verse. It says, Bhagavatam itself, you know, is full of these things, beautiful verses. So the description of Krishna, right? We want to fill the mind with Krishna. You know, here's a verse, a classic verse describing the scene of Krishna entering the forest of Vrindavan and, with Balaram playing his flute, beautiful dress, everything is there. So it's actually two verses at the beginning of a chapter called Venugit. Venugit means song of the flute. The gopis are singing about Krishna in the forest. It's a short chapter, chapter 21, 10th canon. So it begins, it's after the rainy season, it's the autumn, you know, ideal, everything is pristine and pure. So it says, Kusumata vandanadi shashmi bringa, vijikulda gushta sadaksarin mahidram, madhapata dabagaya charayanga, sahapashu bala balashta kujavenam, barha pidam natavadavapu karna yokarnikaram, bimbran vasak kanaka kapisham, vajayanting chamalam, randran venor adadasudaya pura yango pavrinda, vrindaranyam sapatatamanam pravishad gita kirti. So I'm assuming not too many of you understood exactly what I was saying. So I put it into English. Exactly, it's pretty close. Vrindavan's rivers, lakes, and hills ring out with charming hums and trills as flocks of birds and maddened bees rejoice among the flowering trees. To those idyllic woods and glens repairs Govinda with his friends, Sri Rama and the cowherd boys, to taste the most exquisite joys. And as they walk along the way, absorbed in herding and in play, Sri Krishna, beauty absolute, begins to blow his mystic flute. With peacock plume upon his head and fragrant flower on each ear, he enters Braj's woods with tread sublime, a dancer without peer. His gold and yellow raiment glows. His garland reaches to his knees. And from his lips the nectar flows and fills his flute with melodies. As Krishna thus begins his day with friends who sing his glory sweet, he beautifies the forest way with fine impressions of his feet. Samadhi culminates in this, to always see this scene of bliss within oneself and outside too. May Krishna give this boon to you. So that's my little rendition. It's definitely not Shakespeare. Okay, you like that one? I'll give you another one. So this is a few verses. This is not based on Sanskrit exactly, but these are inspired by paintings. So many of you are familiar with some of the art, you know, everywhere. So one of them we just said Govardhan Puja. So you know the painting, the classic Krishna's holding up the hill with friends. Everyone is underneath. They're looking at him with great love. You know. When Krishna stopped King Indra's sacrifice, that monarch of the heavens threw a fit. Those cowards took that foolish boy's advice. Such insolence I never shall permit. So Indra sent the clouds of devastation to pour down catastrophic hail and rain with lightning, winds, and thunder without cessation. The cowards called to Krishna in their pain to show his coward friends his boundless love and crush King Indra's pride for his own good. Sri Krishna lifted Govardhan above and saved his friends while neath the hill they stood. Hare Krishna. Now here's a prayer. You can hear this prayer. This is Queen Kunti. You ever hear of Queen Kunti? Queen Kunti was Krishna's sister of his mother. And she is known as the mother of the Pandavas, for having gone through so many hardships with her sons until finally the war was over. And she's back in Dwarka and Krishna's about ready to leave. It's a very dramatic scene, chapter 8, I think, of the first canon. And so this is one of her final prayers. You know, this is a prayer we can all utter. We can embrace this prayer. It says, Twayme ananna vishaya matir madupate sakrit ratamun vahata radha gange baugumadanviti. O Madhava, please ever fill my mind with thoughts of thee, not any other kind, as Ganges torrent flows into the sea, let all my love flow constantly to thee. Everyone can have this prayer. This is the perfect prayer. Now, it's also very philosophical, because first she's praying that her mind be fixed on Krishna. Until that happens, there's no question of getting love for Krishna. So you see, the mind, when the mind is really fixed on Krishna and we detach from everything, because the previous verse she prayed that even her attraction and for her children will be broken off, and that she'll have all her love will be directed to Krishna, because Krishna is leaving, everything's winding up now, you know. And then when Krishna leaves the planet, the Pandavas, Yudhishthira, he gives up the throne. All of the Pandavas just walked north. They just went to the Himalayas, you know. So this is the level of detachment that they had. And one or two more. So then, this is a beautiful prayer. Similar prayer, Radha and Krishna. It's uttered by Rupa Goswami. It says, Pashupala varenya nandano vanametang mahadata ye yuvam bhavatu panayo bhave bhave bhavato re vapadham bujeshume. O Radha Krishna, children of the best of cowherd men, this single boon I beg from you again and yet again. In all the countless births my endless sins will make me meet, let all my love flow toward your luscious, lustrous lotus feet. Hare Krishna. Anytime you see Radha Shyama Sundar or any other deity of the picture, you can offer this prayer. So I'll make them available through Kalakanta Prabhu if anyone's interested. Any final questions or comments? What do we do now? One more kirtan? All right, let's do another kirtan. Thank you very much for your attention. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.